Hello and welcome into this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host, for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. It's closer to 50 minutes if we're honest. It is Thursday, the first day of October in the year 2020. And I hope you and yours are doing well. Good to have you along today. Thanks for joining the party. Please lay hats, coats, and purses on the bed in that bedroom over there. It is, as I said, the first day of October, and I'm glad you're along for the ride. It is, we lost almost 5 minutes there. Had a little bit of a technical snafu, but we're not on Facebook Live this morning. We're just recording, just going for the podcast, because there was some sort of a problem with the Thursday schedule. It just didn't load properly, so we reloaded the... this is all tech garbage. Please ignore. Just fast forward for a minute or so. if you're not interested, just skip this part. The computer, for some reason, the Thursday schedule loaded up, and it was all grayed out. And then once it played the intro music, it played a few seconds of the intro music. It shut off, and then everything went whoop, just disappeared. And I tried reloading it, and it wouldn't reload. So here we are. Anyway, as I said, it is the Thursday edition of the podcast, the first day of October 2020. Life in the US of A and around the world, as usual, is a bit on the odd side. And we're going to talk a bit about that oddness today. And among other things, let's see, we've got... some audio of Joe Biden lying about President Trump. Oh, this is good stuff. I'm looking forward to playing that one for you. Also, New York City is already screwing up mail-in ballots. Actually, it's not already. It's again. Biden's political director in Texas seems to have waded into a little bit of hot water. Maybe we'll get to that. And should we have a second debate, a third debate? It depends on who you ask. We'll dive into that a little bit later on as well. And between here and there, who knows what will happen. Today, let's see, I've got a busy day. As soon as I get through here, I got to bolt out of the studio and go to another studio and engineer some other audio. And then after that, I for the first time, and I didn't know it was this long, but it's been 8 years since I've had an eye exam. I'm going in for an eye exam this afternoon because my arms are way too short. And also I'm having some little issues, some little vision issues that I'm not going blind. I had LASIK surgery done. How long ago was that? Maybe 18 years ago, something like that. I had LASIK done. It's back in the day when you used to hear the DJs on morning radio talk about how they've had LASIK at so-and-so's LASIK clinic, and it was awesome. And they all do. They did the live commercials and talked about the wonders of LASIK. And Dave Mack and I both had LASIK done, and we had different experiences. He had a perfect experience. I had a textbook problem experience, but they give you the textbook. It's about the size of a phone directory. you sign off on all this stuff that could possibly happen to you. And you see, sure, I recognize that these things could happen. Let's go. And you sign off on it and you hope for the best. And I had all of the problems. Well, not all. I had two or three of the biggies that people talk about. Starbursts on lights at night and night vision reduction and hazy vision sometimes. And so I had all of that stuff. Well, I'm at the point now about 18 years later when without reading glasses, I can't see anything clearly inside of about 6 to 8 feet. And it used to be, I could hold something like a book in front of me, and I could hold it out a little bit further than I normally would, and I could read it. But if I were going to be comfortable, I would need reading glasses. And that's not the case anymore. I can still see crystal clear at a distance in the daytime when the sun is high, but I'm having more nighttime vision issues. In fact, if I go into a store and the lighting is dim enough, it bothers me. It's very, very hard for me to read, like, the labels. You know, if you pick up a can of something that you're doing a home project and you're picking up a can of some sort of a solvent or a glue or maybe a paint or something like that, and you want to read what the best way to apply it is, you turn it around and look at the back, and they've got all the stuff in fine print on the back. And even with my reading glasses, that's tough to read in those situations. And it's not like it's really dark in there. It's just not as bright as it is outside. And that leads me to believe that the issue they told me 8 years ago was beginning has now gotten to the point where it's causing issues, and that is cataracts. I think I have a little bit of cataract development. And we'll dig into that this afternoon, and I'll find out. And tomorrow, I'll give you an update. But that's the extent of it, and that's later this afternoon. But I don't have enough time to leave the other studio and come back to this studio and then go to the eye appointment. Well, I do have enough time, but I will probably get half an hour or 45 minutes back here. So why travel literally from the other side of town back here and then back out again about halfway? Just stay out and find things to do. So I'll be grabbing some lunch and running some errands and things, and then going to have my eyes examined, and they'll probably dilate them, and life will be really weird after that. Anyway, but that's today. That's my day today. And like I said, I'll fill you in on what happens tomorrow, okay? All right. You know, I like to start with something absurd if I can, and this is really absurd. And it's absurd in a, yeah, that figures, kind of way. The Associated Press style book. This is the guidelines that the Associated Press news agency uses. Their people, their reporters, their writers use when they are crafting stories. The phraseology, the things that they can say, the terms they can use, that's the style book. Well, the Associated Press style book tweeted, they have a Twitter account, they tweeted an admonishment to stop using the word riot to describe political protests and instead use the milder term unrest in order to avoid stigmatizing protesters. The guidance was tweeted out Tuesday amid numerous protests, riots, and looting across the country. The official AP style book Twitter account said this: use care in deciding which term best applies. A riot is a wild or violent disturbance of the peace involving a group of people. The term riot suggests uncontrolled chaos and pandemonium. Focusing on rioting and property destruction rather than underlying grievance has been used in the past to stigmatize broad swaths of people protesting against lynching, police brutality, or for racial justice, going back to the urban uprisings of the 1960s. Now, this is the AP style book practicing Orwellian substitution of terminology, telling the people who write for the Associated Press, don't use the word riot when it comes to these people who were protesting, even though they are uncontrolled, there is chaos, there is pandemonium, there is violence, and it is wild. We have been watching this ourselves. You and I both have been watching this, right? We go to social media every day, and we see the little video clips posted by people who have been on the scene, recorded with their cell phones, and we have seen Molotov cocktails being thrown. We have seen windows being smashed out of businesses. We have seen people's vehicles stopped in the street and them dragged from the street from the vehicles. We have seen people beaten. We have seen people bloodied. We have seen people shot. My friend, The Associated Press has lost its mind. But that happened a long time ago. They've been changing their terminology for a long time. Going back to the day when they started saying undocumented immigrants instead of illegal immigrants. They refused to use the word alien. These people are undocumented immigrants. That's where this came from. And so, we should not be surprised that the Associated Press is now telling its people not to actually use the word which accurately describes what's happening in Democrat-controlled cities across America. Oh no! Don't call that a riot! That's bad! And we're back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for Thursday, October 1st, 2020. Really good to have you along today. Oh, man. I just posted to Facebook to let everybody know who would normally be tuning into Facebook Live. There was a hiccup. I'm just not going to start it late on Facebook Live. Go grab the podcast. Subscribe. And by the way, thanks to you, subscriber. I appreciate the fact that you do. I appreciate the fact that you grab the podcast every day, that you listen. Can I ask you to do me a favor? Share it with your friends. Post it to social media with a note. Hey, listen to this guy. And let's get the family growing. It has grown from the beginning. I appreciate you for doing that. Let's keep it going. Let's make it worth the time every day. More worth the time, maybe I should say. Okay? All right. Well, you probably heard the news by now that Disney's laid off a bunch of people. They're laying off 28,000 employees, 28,000 cast members. That's a full quarter, one-fourth of their theme park workers, West Coast and Florida. They're laying off 25% of their theme park workers. And I told you the other day about Yeehaw Bob, right? Did I not do that? Did I tell you about Yeehaw Bob? Jane and I have made it a habit whenever possible when we go to visit Walt Disney World. We go over to the Port Orleans Riverside to the River Roost Lounge, and we sit there for an hour or so and sing along with Yeehaw Bob. I know that sounds corny, but Bob Jackson was just a delight. There was one day several years ago where we had spent several days in the Disney parks, and we took an entire day and went over to Universal Studios and exhausted ourselves walking around to Universal Studios because it's just big and there's lots of walking. And we were both exhausted, but I still wanted to go see Yeehaw Bob. And we went to see him, and I was so glad I did because I felt, I mean, it made my day. It absolutely made my day. I actually was a bit depressed after going to Universal because I was disappointed in a handful of ways, but it was the first time we'd ever been there. And going back to see Yeehaw Bob made my day. And I found out that the other day he posted to social media, he's not going back. They won't be bringing him back. And he's among 28,000 people who Disney has let go. And that's sad. It's very sad. And now, there are two major airlines. They're going to be furloughing 32,000 workers because there's no COVID-19 relief. 32,000. Democrat leaders and the Trump administration officials have to reach an agreement on a stimulus package. They're working on it. The Democrats want a whole lot more money than we need. And you could be asking yourself, well, how could they possibly ask you for too much money to help these people for COVID-19, for a pandemic? It's because they have packed a lot of garbage into their bill. Relief for illegal aliens, relief for lawbreakers, all kinds of bizarre stuff is in the bill. It is really a fairy tale dream bill as far as they're concerned. It's just loony. And the Republicans are trying to talk sense, and the Democrats won't listen. But back to the airlines. American Airlines plans to furlough over 19,000 workers beginning today. due to low demand for travel. They're willing to reverse themselves should a stimulus deal be reached that includes the $25 billion for the airline industry. That's according to the AP. Apparently nothing was out of the style book there. United Airlines, which plans to furlough over 13,000 jobs, also indicated the employee furloughs would be canceled if Washington reaches a stimulus package deal soon. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. According to the AP, the airline industry has been encouraging employees to take early retirements or severance packages in order to curb spending. However, the industry still employs a workforce larger than needed to meet current demand for flying. That current demand, by the way, is down 70% from last year. Not expected to return to pre-coronavirus pandemic levels for at least 3 years. The airlines are requesting funding in order to keep their workers on payroll through March of next year, 2021. Congress previously provided the industry with $25 billion to avoid layoffs through September of this year. So we've just gone through that month. The end of that month has happened, and now they're looking today at furloughing all these people. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi have been engaged in renewed coronavirus stimulus talks this week after failing to reach an agreement back in August due to differences on the magnitude of desired spending. Democratic leadership had been using the HEROES Act, a $3.4 trillion stimulus package passed in the House, as a point of negotiation. Republicans were intent on capping spending at $1 trillion, and even then, many GOP senators weren't sold on it. Mnuchin said yesterday evening, last night, that the Trump administration is on board with new funding for airlines, but also suggested the president wouldn't be willing to spend more than $1.5 trillion on another stimulus package. During a Monday interview on MSNBC, Nancy Pelosi argued that because Democrats had lowered their spending by about $1 trillion, it was time for Republicans to come up, because we have to crush this virus. Let me remind you that very little in the Democrat package is actually about crushing this virus. Let me also remind you that all of the indicators are saying the virus is dying out. The Wall Street Journal, citing Democratic aides, reports that House Democrats originally planned to vote on the new spending bill yesterday ahead of an expected recess, but have since postponed the vote to allow another day for the ongoing negotiations. Pelosi said, "We found areas where we're seeking further clarification. Our conversations will continue." On Wednesday evening, Mnuchin told reporters that the negotiators have made a lot of progress over the last few days. He says, "We still don't have an agreement, but we have more work to do, and we're going to see where we end up." The current Democratic-favored House bill, as it stands, has virtually no chance of passing the Senate and has been dismissed by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell as a political stunt. As such, a breakthrough in negotiations between Pelosi and Mnuchin will be necessary for a new stimulus package to have a chance at moving toward the president's desk for signature. I encourage you to go back and look at what the Democrats have been advocating for in the past when it comes to a financial relief package. Look at what they want included. There's been a lot of talk over the years about pork, you know, things stuffed into bills as though they are sausage and you can just cram all this stuff into them. And people just look at the outside and say, "Oh, that's a sausage," and they sign off on it. Go look at what the Democrats want and you'll understand why the Republicans are having issues. Because rational, right-thinking, honest people wouldn't ask for some of the things they're asking for. But we're not dealing with rational, honest, right-thinking people. We're dealing with progressives. And that's something you need to remember. And never forget, we're dealing with progressives. And their bottom line is whatever they can get. And whatever they can get, they're going to spend on their progressive causes. And their progressive causes usually create more problems than they solve. In fact, we've spent almost the last 4 years with the president trying to undo progressive solutions, which have cost people money, have lost people jobs, and have put the nation on a path which is wrong for America. Because what happened a while back was that President Barack Hussein Obama said this.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
And the Democrats want to keep that fundamental change, that transformation going. They are intent on their continued disregard for the Constitution. And yet, every day you hear them say that what the Republicans are trying to do is unconstitutional. Sometimes that is true. But more often than not, they just use that terminology in order to justify their deceit. So again, I encourage you, go back and look at what they've asked for in the past. Look at what's been denied before. And you'll understand why this is not a real coronavirus relief bill. It is a wish list put forth by the Democrats. Because there's an election going on, and they want to find ways to condemn the president any way they can. And when the Republicans and the president say no to their unreasonable wish list, they will step in front of the news cameras and lie. And lie again, and lie some more. And speaking of lying, Joe Biden has been telling quite a few whoppers lately. He's been lying about the president. He's been lying about many things. And you know what? Thanks to the wonders of social media, his lies are forever. Got some audio here I want to play for you. You'll hear Joe Biden, and then you'll hear what really happened. Listen up.
Condemn in the strong.
Hold on. Here we go. Let's start over again.
Donald Trump adds fuel to every fire.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. It has no place in America.
Because he won't stand up to any form of violence.
To anyone who acted criminally in this weekend's racist violence, you will be held fully accountable.
Antifa's an idea.
Those who spread violence in the name of bigotry strike at the very core of America.
He's got no problem with right-wing militia, white supremacists, and vigilantes with assault weapons.
But many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to...
Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for Thursday, the first day of October. And I rolled that audio looking at the clock thinking, yeah, I got a couple of minutes. I got time to get out of this. I didn't. I'm going to roll it for you again because I want you to be able to actually hear it. And all of it because I had to cut the last of it off. But the contrast is amazing. Joe Biden is telling bald-faced lies on the campaign trail. Now, he's only lying to, you know, 8 or 9 people at a time, but but still, he's lying to people. And it's important to be able to contrast what he says with the truth so you understand. So let's do this again, okay? Let's listen to what Joe Biden actually says and then contrast that with the truth coming directly from the president.
Because Donald Trump adds fuel to every fire.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. It has no place in America.
Because he won't stand up to any form of violence.
To anyone who acted criminally in this weekend's racist violence,
you will be held fully accountable.
Antifa is an idea.
Those who spread violence in the name of bigotry strike at the very core of America.
He's got no problem with right-wing militia, white supremacists, and vigilantes with assault weapons.
But many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally.
Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans.
Antifa is an idea, not an organization.
Oh, you got it.
Not militia.
Antifa is an idea, not an organization. You know where those words come from? Antifa. That's where those words come from. That's how Antifa describes itself. Joe Biden is quoting Antifa in defense of Antifa. Not being an observer, not being objective, not stepping away and looking at the situation to see what's actually going on. He's defending Antifa by quoting Antifa's words from their website. Also included in that mix was the Charlottesville issue, where he unequivocally condemned these groups, these neo-Nazis, these white supremacists. And that is what Joe Biden and others like him continue to misrepresent. The very fine people. The very fine people were honest people who just disagreed about taking a statue down, not the people who showed up looking for a fight. And there were two groups who showed up hoping they could get into a fight. And so they did. But they didn't represent everybody who was there. There were some well-intentioned people, some very fine people, who were there just to represent their interests, which weren't violence. But Joe Biden and the rest like him will continue to lie about this, because enough people, including Chris Wallace of Fox News, enough people still believe the fine people lie. They don't have enough integrity to actually go back and watch the video. The internet's forever. The video is there. Fox News, of all places, they were there at that press conference. They have the video on their servers. They know what was said. And yet, Chris Wallace, in the debate, actually brought up the very fine people lie, as though it were the truth. He and others, liberals in the press, progressives, will continue to parrot that lie because it fits their worldview. It fits their narrative. It fits their preferred reality, but not reality itself. And so it's very important to actually compare what Joe Biden says to what really happened. Because what Joe Biden says is coming from a list of talking points agreed upon by his campaign team. And what Joe Biden is saying, most of the time, is not true and can be easily proven to be not true. So, don't be shocked by anything Joe Biden says, because Joe Biden, bless his heart, is lying because he's been a liar for his entire professional political career. He's a professional politician, and he has been for 48 years, 50 years. He's been a professional politician for practically five decades. And everything he has managed to accomplish during that five decades, which isn't much, has actually worked against the American people and created bigger issues than what he was seeking to solve, which is typical for progressives in politics. Their solutions tend to create bigger problems. And as I said a while ago, we've spent the past almost 4 years digging out from under progressive solutions, which have created bigger problems. And one of those problems that we're dealing with right now is the mail-in voting issue. That is the progressive solution to a problem which really, I have a feeling we're going to look back on very soon and realize wasn't anywhere as drastic and important as we said it was. Their solution to the coronavirus pandemic and voting is mail-in voting. And in Queens, New York, we're seeing how voters could be disenfranchised when mail-in ballots are used, because they were used during a Democrat primary this summer. And the statistic was consistent with an analysis done on mail-in votes nationwide between 2012 and 2018. It also mirrored in municipal elections in Paterson, New Jersey. All the situations are a mix of voters failing to receive ballots, technical errors in filling out the ballots, or the post office failing to postmark the envelopes. Still, the New York City Board of Education, or that is elections, has started mass mailing ballots for the November elections. And it's already a mess. The Gothamist is reporting that residents are receiving ballots with the wrong names or errors in other critical information. They say the New York City Board of Elections has mailed out nearly 500,000 absentee ballots ahead of Election Day this November, as many New Yorkers are opting to vote by mail during the pandemic. Yet some voters are already reporting problems with their ballots that could invalidate someone's vote if they aren't caught in time. Multiple voters in Brooklyn told Gothamist WNYC that they have received a mislabeled official absentee ballot envelope. Normally, the voter inserts their completed ballot into the envelope and signs the outside, but in these cases, their ballot envelopes bear the wrong name and address. If a person signs their own name to this faulty ballot envelope, the ballot would be voided. So far, voters in Park Slope, Prospect Heights, Carroll Gardens, Crown Heights, Clinton Hill, Bushwick, Flatbush, Brooklyn Heights, and Sunset Park have already reported this issue. More than 140,000 absentee ballots have gone out across the borough. These errors added to the confusion of some civilian voters in the city receiving ballots marked for military use. According to the New York Post, voters in New York City have received mail-in ballots for the 2020 presidential election marked for military use, despite never having served in the armed forces, causing confusion and concerns over whether the ballots can or should be used. The misprint makes it appear that the voters received an official military absentee ballot instead of a military absentee ballot, leaving several borough residents who received the documents, including two Post journalists, worried that their votes might not be properly tallied. The New York City Board of Elections has confirmed that the ballots are for absentee or military use, and these ballots are valid. A dash was meant to separate the words absentee and military, but was omitted by the printer. The agency's also blaming a vendor for the wrong names and addresses on the return envelopes, saying the problem will be addressed in future mailings. The Board of Elections said it was made aware of the problem on Saturday when a voter from Brooklyn Heights contacted them. Michael Ryan, the BOE's executive director, attributed the problem to an error made by the vendor, Phoenix Graphics, who's been contracted to print and mail the ballots for voters in Brooklyn and Queens. At this point, the BOE doesn't know how many voters may be affected or how it will remedy the problem. But Ryan said they'll make sure the vendor addresses this problem in future mailings and by determining the best way to make sure people who received erroneous envelopes receive new ones. Now, there's more to this, and I'm just going to skip it, because we're seeing here that we have problems. This is just in New York. We have problems in New York, and we're seeing the same issues arise in other places. We're hearing about them in California. We're hearing about them in Texas. We're hearing about them around the country. We're hearing about people getting ballots at their homes with other people's names on them. We're hearing about people receiving ballots, multiple ballots. Two people live in a house, they'll get five or six ballots for people who lived there years ago. Or people who are dead. So this is common across the country. It's 150,000 or so in this particular incident, but when you add them all together across the country, it's a sizable number of errors. And these errors just play to the favor of the Democrats, because they will, of course, in progressive-controlled cities and states, enact measures to delay the vote. And in so doing, give themselves time to find the votes they need to turn the election in the direction they want it to go, which is what has happened in Democrat-controlled states and cities across America for quite some time. Remember, in California, in Orange County, a staunchly Republican place, by the way, and they kept finding votes, kept finding votes, and kept finding votes until the Democrats all won. The same thing happened with Al Franken, remember? They kept finding his votes and finding his votes until he won. And then they had the votes they needed to pass Obamacare. This is an old tactic by the Democrats. Now they're just using the coronavirus to turbocharge it. Which is why it's so important to get out and vote in person. And we drop into the final segment for this Thursday, the first day of October. I was talking about Democrats using the coronavirus. And here's another example. CNN, right now, which is basically it's the Communist News Network. They're giving extensive coverage to a spike in COVID cases in Wisconsin. They're sounding the alarm about Trump's upcoming outdoor rally there. Oh, there's been a spike in COVID cases. Just going to get a lot of people killed if they come gather outdoors for Trump. Well, they're also not saying a word, nothing, about all the street protests that have gone on in Wisconsin and their impact on the spread of COVID. Once again, it looks like COVID is very, very smart. It's very smart. I don't know how it can be so smart. It's so smart. And it blows me away. It really does blow me away. Let's see here. What was it? I had a list the other day. Oh, here it is. If you're on Twitter, you probably know who Zuby is. Zuby had this list the other day about things that we've learned about COVID-19 based on policies. We have learned that COVID-19 can count. It's time conscious. It supports BLM. It can distinguish between weddings, parties, and funerals. It can distinguish between social and work settings. COVID-19 can travel through the internet. It's nocturnal. Apparently, all of the stuff in the daytime, it doesn't affect anybody. But at night, doggone it, it really does. It doesn't get to the bar until after 10 p.m. It can read a calendar. It knows your height. It discerns between high school sports and club sports. It respects invisible borders between England, Scotland, and Wales. Zuby's in England, by the way. It's anti-religion and targets churches. It doesn't affect supermarket workers. It has manners, and it won't infect you if you're sitting, you're eating, or drinking. That goes back to that whole thing about having to wear a mask walking into a restaurant. You walk into a restaurant, you have to have a mask on. They got a sign on the door nowadays, odds are, where you live. In some places, not so much. But in most places, you have to wear a mask until they seat you. And when you're seated and you've placed your order and your food comes, you can take your mask off. And somehow, mysteriously, COVID-19 doesn't spread while you're eating. Go figure. Yikes. It's deathly terrified of masks. It knows what day of the week it is. It understands language and targets English speakers. And it really hates grandmas in particular for some reason. We've learned a lot about COVID-19. A lot. Holy cow. And we've learned a lot about the Democrats and their tactics when it comes to elections. A campaign operative in Texas for the Biden campaign, attempting to rig the 2020 election with the help of others in a massive ballot harvesting scheme. That's according to two private investigators who testified under oath that they have video evidence, documentation, and witnesses to prove this. With the help of mass mail-in ballots, the illegal ballot harvesting operation could harvest 700,000 ballots. That's what one Harris County Democrat operative allegedly bragged. The investigators, a former FBI agent and former police officer, claim that Biden's Texas political director, Dallas Jones, and his cohorts have been hoarding mail-in and absentee ballots and ordering operatives to fill them out for people in Harris County illegally, including dead people, homeless people, and nursing home residents in the 2020 presidential election. That's what Patrick Howley of the National File has reported. While law enforcement agencies are reportedly investigating these potential crimes, nothing will be done about it until well after the November 3rd, 2020 election, according to the former FBI agent. Dallas Jones was appointed the Biden campaign's Texas political director in late August. Mark A. McGuire and Charles F. Marler provided sworn affidavits as part of a class action lawsuit in the Texas Supreme Court. That's Stephen Hotz, M.D., et al. Against Harris County and the state of Texas. The National File obtained the private investigator's affidavits. In his testimony, Aguirre stated that he is a retired captain with the Houston Police Department and now a private investigator. He says, "I'm currently involved in an investigation related to a wide-ranging and fraudulent ballot harvesting scheme in Harris County intended to rig the elections in the Houston-Harris County area. This scheme involves voter fraud on a massive scale. Based on interviews, review of documents, and other information, he identified three individuals, including a state senator and the Harris County commissioner, who are working with Jones on the ballot harvesting operation." Quote, District 13 Texas State Senator Boris Miles, who is the handler of Mr. Jones, political consultant Gerald Womack, and Precinct 1 Harris County Commissioner Rodney Ellis, one of the companies these individuals are using as a front for this operation is AB Canvassing, although there are others that have been identified that we are investigating. Aguirre also noted that the ballot harvesters have been exploiting the elderly with the complicity of nursing home staff. He says, "I have in my possession the videotaped interviews of witnesses attesting to the aforementioned people having groups of people completing thousands of absentee and mail-in ballots, including completing ballots for deceased individuals, illegally going into nursing homes with the complicity of the nursing home staff, and filling out and forging the signatures of nursing home residents, signing up homeless individuals to vote using the ballot harvester's address, then completing the ballot and forging the homeless individual's signature. This entire operation is being run by the elite politicians of the Democrat Party in Houston-Hams County." Private investigator Charles F. Marler stated in his testimony that he formerly worked with the FBI and he was an investigative specialist conducting undercover operations on espionage and terrorist targets. Marler stated that the former Harris County clerk Diane Troutman was so concerned about being implicated in the fraud, she resigned earlier this year, citing personal health reasons. Marler stated that the Harris County commissioner was not deterred, and continued to move forward with the plan to mass mail ballots and expand the illegal ballot harvesting scam. In December of 2019, he says, I was approached by two individuals who witnessed activity from an illegal ballot harvesting operation in Harris County. Since that date, I've been investigating the illegal ballot harvesting operation. During my investigation, a core group of names continued to surface regarding the organization and operation of the voter fraud scheme. Witnesses have stated to me that Precinct 1 Harris County Commissioner Rodney Ellis and District 13 Texas State Senator Boris Miles are leading the illegal ballot harvesting operation in Harris County, Texas. Their chief lieutenants are Houston businessman Gerald Womack and political consultant Dallas Jones, who worked directly under them in executing the ballot harvesting operation in Harris County, Texas. And this goes on for many more paragraphs. It's coming to us from AmericanGreatness.com. And there's actually a PDF of the resignation story. There are links to different things in this. So get this today. Get it today. Also, there's a video as well that shows you what's some of the things that are going on. So make sure you get today's show notes, okay? Get the show notes. I post them every day to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Grab the show notes today and read this article and follow the links and find out what's going on for yourself so you can see what the Democrats are up to. The Democrats are up to literally no good. They're working on a plan to disrupt this election and to turn it over, to undermine the will of the American people by breaking federal law. And I would hazard a guess that this is not the first time they've done this. I would hazard a guess that in 2016, they did much the same thing, which is probably why everyone on the left was confident that there was no way that Donald Trump would become president, because they had rigged everything they could, or so they thought. But this time, they're more desperate. This time, there's a lot more at stake. This time, the Democrats know that if Donald Trump has four more years in office, that much more of the foundation laid by Barack Obama over 8 years will be dismantled. And they realize that Donald Trump will be successful in appointing conservatives to the Supreme Court. And in doing so, will stop them from getting away with things they've been getting away with for a long, long time. So they are desperate to stop the re-election of Donald Trump at any cost, which means they will do anything, they will say anything. There's nothing that will stop them from doing anything they can. And we're watching it happen right now as they're frightening a nation into voting by mail so they can twist the election to an outcome they want. Hey, that's it for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.